That really is real now, isn't it?
I live in Notting Hill. You live in Beverly Hills. Everyone in the world knows who you are. My mother has trouble remembering my name.
Fine. Fine. Good decision. Good decision. The fame thing isn't really real, you know. And don't forget, I'm also just a girl standing in front of a boy, asking him to love her.
Podcast. This is Andrew.
This is Iron Man.
Wait, what?
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. I am Iron Man.
Is this actually your suit that you're controlling elsewhere, or is it actually?
Mm-mm. I'm actually Iron Man. There's no suit.
There's no suit. Okay. Oh man. So apparently there's no one else in this podcast, so we're moving right along.
That person is dumbfounded by his co-host's idiocy.
We've done like 400 of these and no. Took you this long? That's impressive. All right, Andrew Robinson. Fearless leader, oh great one. This week you asked us to review a movie by a man that Douglas hates and I also hate, but you love. Can you tell us the name of the movie and why in God's name you told us to watch this movie?
You shall love whether you like it or not. Emotions, they come and go like clouds. Love is not only a feeling. You shall love. To love is to run the risk of failure, the risk of betrayal. You fear your love has died. It perhaps is waiting to be transformed into something higher.
The name of this movie that Damien is referring to is To the Wonder, which is the latest film.
So I'd like to jump in just for 1 second before Andrew actually speaks to give what I believe to be an objective opinion.
Okay.
Because I understand, if Andrew isn't willing to admit it, I at least fully understand his move here. And he's quite devious, this one. What he's done is he's realized that Damien understands the rules,
right,
seeing as he created them, of the Fantasy League. Right. And he said to himself, how can I make sure that Damien does not get the bonus?
All right.
I can make him watch the movies.
So, Douglas, just imagine, eventually I'm going to be picking Smurfs 2 this year.
Right.
No, I'm fine with that because it's going to make me money. Of course I want to watch that.
But you see, the game that Andrew is playing is more dangerous based on the set of movies that he has chosen.
But you see, the difference, Damien, that and you already know this, you can probably guess this, between me and you, is I will force myself to watch and talk about every film that's on my list.
No, I kind of understood what Andrew was doing, but I wanted to watch this movie. That is why I put this movie on my list. for one specific reason. Much like the Dogtooth director, I was looking for a reason to write off Terrence Malick. That is the reason I chose To the Wonder. Now, I kind of hope that it would have been a fantastic movie, or at least a good movie, right? Something to make me go, all right, Damien.
So, Damien, quick, sorry to cut you, but just out of curiosity,
yes.
Have you seen all of his other films, or is it just a few that you've seen?
I've seen the three that I hate. I've seen
Which
Pocahontas.
One is it that you haven't seen? You've seen Pocahontas, you've seen Badlands, because I made you watch that, and you saw Tree of Life.
And Know This.
You know what? I think you need
so
to
So you
see?
Haven't seen Days of Heaven,
yes.
Or...
Thin Red
or
Line.
Or what's...
No,
Red Line.
I
you haven't
see
seen
Thin
those
Red
two.
Line.
That's supposed
I've
to be a great movie.
Yes,
most
it's
people
supposed to be.
Like that one.
It is supposed to be a great movie. I agree.
That's as far as you go.
Yeah. It is not Tree of Life. So by that measure it is a good movie. But Thin Red Line is, I don't have the reverence that most people have for that movie. But even if I did love Thin Red Line, even if it was the best thing ever, between Tree of Life and Know This, that is enough cause for me to write him off as a director. So Andrew Robinson, I want to hear what you thought of the movie. Because you already know what me and Douglas think of this.
I already know what you guys think. You're just like, how can I murder Andrew through the internet? How does it work? Where is the button that I blow up Trinidad with so I know Andrew won't pick these movies ever again? That's all Douglas and Damien are thinking about
No. Andrew, if you pick a movie that I truly don't want... So if you pick A Good Day to Die Hard for us to review... I'd probably not watch it and come in here and sit inside. I wanted to see this movie. But stop skirting the issue. What did you think of this movie, Andrew Robinson?
I don't think I like this movie that much. And it's kind of strange because I remember when I first saw this movie at TIFF. It was the last movie I'd watched. And I think... Remembering that experience, I think it was just fatigue, which kind of made it just gloss over, and I just went ridiculously vague and enjoyed it then, because I watched it like right after seeing The Master, and bad idea, guys, don't do that. Don't watch The Master, which is like one of these great movies, which kind of just makes you think about 20 billion things and you love everything, and then go to another movie and expect to have an objective opinion of whatever the next movie is, right?
Challenge accepted.
But this movie, like, the thing with Terrence Malick, and it's something that I've said for a few filmmakers which I have come to love, is that what he attempts to do more than anything else, and this is something that I say about a lot of movies that you guys just aren't willing to make that leap with most times. Sometimes you come around with it, but most times not, is that I appreciate a lot more when I see someone trying to do something interesting, right? And it would be one thing for me to be saying this if this was the first movie Terrence Malick did this really voyeuristic style of trying to get into what a character's mindset is and trying to just... And this seems... scaling down what he's doing, but kind of hinting at a story while at the same time just really giving you an emotion more than anything else. But this is around his fourth try with it, because I think he started doing movies like this with Days of Heaven, which was his second feature, and every film following it was just kind of gradually moving towards his style, where Tree of Life was the one everyone loved, and... No, sorry, not Tree of Life, I meant The Thin Red Line, and Tree of Life was where he went like 100% into this style. And I actually rewatched Tree of Life recently, and that movie was one which I felt confused about because I didn't think I quite got it. So I was kind of not sure. But rewatching it, I still am not sure exactly what that movie, everything in that movie is for. but I appreciate that movie a whole lot more than this one. And I think it's because in this movie, it's not just a lack of narrative. Because
sorry, Andrew, I have just a quick question. Just remind me, Days of Heaven, was that the movie with Orlando Bloom and Ava Green, cracks?
Ava Green, no.
Kingdom of Heaven is the movie.
Kingdom of Heaven is what I'm thinking. Okay.
Was Ava Green in Kingdom of Heaven?
Yes, she was. She was the princess or whatever she her, whatever they were.
Unless we're both misremembering. Kingdom of Heaven is what you're thinking about.
Yes.
Days of Heaven. Days of Heaven is a movie with Richard Gere.
Oh, I don't even... oh, wait. Days of Heaven, where he comes back. Is it that... He supposedly goes to war and then comes back, his wife being Jodie Foster, and then after
no,
a while...
No. It's actually a really good movie. It's on Netflix Instant. It's like 90 minutes long. You should give it a chance, if anything. It's absolutely nothing like this movie.
Can you describe the movie, though?
Days of Heaven?
Yes.
It's about a guy who's in... During... a guy who accidentally murders someone and runs away to this farming land with and falls in love with a woman, and it becomes him trying to become more than the poor man he is, and all of the things that happen on the farm. Okay. That's what it is.
Actually, has a story. Is Jodie Foster in that movie?
No, Jodie Foster is not in that movie.
Okay.
but to get back to the wonder, right, and talking about the thing, because the truth of the matter is, while I was watching this movie, and I guess I should mention this because I found this quite funny, and I'm sure you guys will. I don't know if Mommy actually told you this, but like as soon as I finished watching this movie, I ended up taking a call from my mother last night, and she was asking me what I was watching, and I'm like, you wouldn't like it, because she would turn her brain off after 2 minutes, right? She'd say, what rubbish have you given me? And I'm like, well, it's a romance movie. She's like, well, of course I'd like it. I'm like, well, there isn't much talking in the movie. And she asked me, her response obviously at that point was, is it porn?
Yes, she did tell me that. She told me about this, these communications between you. Yes.
And that just made me smile. But regardless, with the movie itself, when I was watching this movie, like, I actually enjoyed it for about the first hour, right?
Wow.
Because throughout that period, like, it felt, it actually, I could actually comprehend and follow this idea of the romance, the relationship between Ben Affleck and Olga Kurylenko, and then with Rachel McAdams and all of these things. But there was something that kind of just changed for me that after that hour mark, where I think it was when the Rachel McAdams section ended and Olga Kurylenko returned.
Yeah, that was really sad.
That your brain went, no one would make this decision.
Agreed. Agreed.
Well, that was part of it, but not really. The character of Olga Kurylenko, it just felt really stupid, because when I was watching it at that point, it became this moment of guilt, where all I could understand at that point was that Olga was going through all of the things she was going through for guilt. She doesn't have her child anymore, she's with this man, and things aren't going so well because it's different than before. And then you see these scenes where Olga Kurylenko is continuously, for whatever reason, there's a fight, and then she's continuously the one having to, what it seems to be, apologizing and literally groveling towards Ben Affleck, you know, kissing his shoes, kissing his hands, and then we have other scenes where they're not fighting, and it seems like all Olga Kurylenko can do is dance. They're going through the supermarket, they're spinning around dancing, we're going down the street, she's jumping up and down, she's in a bedroom and she's jumping on the bed, and it just felt like we've turned this character from not really being a grand character in any sort of a movie, but instead of being about this relationship, just trying to be the happiest character in the world for no, it's going straight from happy to sad, and it just kind of confounded me. I just couldn't understand what was going on, and it disturbed me. And the other thing that really troubled me about this movie was Javier Bardem, that there was, if I was willing to allow a lot of this religious aspect in the movie for the discussion of love, marriage, divorce, because those are three things which are really prevalent in this film, really out there. You know, we talk, when we first start this movie, you see Olga Kurylenko and Ben Affleck, and Olga says something to the effect of, "I don't care if you don't marry me, because if I left you for that reason, it meant I didn't love you." And then it goes on further when we meet Javier Bardem's character, when he talks about things like love, when he talks about things like beauty. Beauty is something you have to show, it's not something that just is, and all of these things which kind of work. But towards the end of the movie, I feel like he just popped up for no reason, and it just bothered me. I mean, I'm sure you guys have a much longer list and things that I'm going, well, I'm okay with that part. That part you're not even okay with. But does any of this make sense to you in how I'm trying to understand this movie?
Not sure how I can respond to that question, Andrew. So I almost want Damien to go before I do, because I want to hear his side of the story.
All right, sure. As I said earlier, I wanted a reason to stop watching Terrence Malick movies. I figured when we saw the trailer, we knew this is what was coming. I expected it to be as bad as Tree of Life. I didn't expect it to be worse. This movie is clearly worse, despite it being a shorter movie. It's about 2 hours. It feels like it runs on into infinity. It felt like at the end of the movie that I should just go to my bed and try to sleep away, you know, what I just saw. It is a draining, boring. It feels, there's points in the movie where it feels oppressive, and I realized about 18 minutes into the movie when this line came up. The line is, "What is this love that loves us?" That is part of the narration that is going on. It's not in English, because why would it be? And it is said, and then some other things are said, as if this line is a thing that normal people says. And when I saw that, I went, oh, I realize what is happening here. Terrence Malick is so loved and so revered that he is clearly fucking with everybody. He is waiting for someone to call him on his BS. Because this movie, you know, there's times you watch a movie and you go, maybe this movie isn't for me. Terrence Malick doesn't get that. This movie is for people like us. The only people in the world that is going to watch this movie are people who sit down and talk about movies on a podcast. Nobody else will see it. And the numbers bear that out. It made $3, maybe $4. No one saw this movie. So it is only for us. And whenever I watch movies like this, I go on the internet, because there's always someone willing to heap praise on movies like this, because they've seen so many movies that things like entertainment is no longer of value to them. As long as it's different, they're willing to show all the praise in the world on it. It is what happened with Dogtooth. It is what happened with Tree of Life. None of those movies are entertaining. This movie is not entertaining. It is really, like, it is aggressively bad. To the point where I don't understand why any of the actors that are in the movie, why they didn't, when the movie came out, they did kind of like come out with a campaign and disown. Olga Kurylenko does have a choice, because who is going to cast her in anything good? Everybody else in this movie have been in great movies, right? There's people who will write favorable reviews for just about anything. And with movies like this, there's people who, when they write the reviews, they say, you can see that what, in essence, they're saying is that all movies are the same, and we should trumpet the movies that are different, despite them not being entertaining or having any significant value. And this is one of those movies. And I'm tired of Terrence Malick doing it. It is Tree of Life, you took your 19 years and you were proving some point, and people like Andrew are going to sit there and lie to themselves forever and tell themselves that there's something worth with the movie. And people like Andrew will say it with this movie as well. And it is for that reason why I'm, you know, I don't like, this is part of the reason I don't like leaving comments on the internet and things like that, because when you see, when people write the reviews and you look at the comments, you see where one person disagrees with whatever the reviewer's reviews, whatever the positive reviews, and then people jump on and attack that person. But their argument isn't really of the movie, it is of the director. You know, Terrence Malick is a great director. He's the only one that can make movies like this, etc., etc. And I find myself at points like this worried that in 30 years' time that I will be at that point where, you know, things like Iron Man just doesn't do it for me anymore. I'll walk into a room and go, "Oh, you like Superman 12? And shake my head. And I go, "No, I only like this esoteric movie that two people in the world have seen, where a man shines a light at a coin for 90 minutes. I'm really worried that is going to happen, but I'm going to fight tooth and nail to prevent it from happening. There are weird movies that I love, Lars von Trier, etc., etc. But those movies are movies. If people don't like them, they can at least point to a reason, like a good reason why they don't like them. I'll disagree with them, but you know, them not liking it is fine. We'll joke and thing, but you don't like a von Trier movie, that's okay. This movie I don't think anyone likes, because there's nothing and it is gone. There's nothing entertaining about this movie. Right? Douglas, did you find anything entertaining or of worth with this movie? And Olga Kurylenko can't act. So, and she, like 60% of the movie is her on the screen. And she's not good. She's really is not good at the acting. So. Yeah, just more bad things to say. Douglas Robertson.
So, I just want to sum up what the two of you have been saying. And essentially what's going on here is that Damien is saying that this movie should get a 1, and Andrew is saying this movie should get a 4. Am I correct?
I think you misheard me, sir. Just because I decided to talk for more than 2 minutes doesn't mean that I think this movie should get a 4.
Really? Damn. That's, you see,
that's
my,
the metric I've been using exactly. So far.
Usually I just shut off. Right. I don't really listen to what you say. And so it's by the length of time. Right. So the fact that you took about a half an hour today means that you really loved it. Mm-hmm. No? Oh, fuck. Oh, well. Apologies, Andrew. So... Actually, what I want to say about this movie, I want to start off by saying this movie isn't anything I would recommend to anybody by a long shot, but I will give it this much. I have way more time for this movie than I do one like The Tree of Life.
Have you seen The Tree of Life yet?
Yes. Well, oh, no, not The Tree of Life. I'm thinking Pocahontas. What's Pocahontas' right. name?
I'll never refer to it by
the New World
again.
The New World, thank you.
I prefer to call it Pocahontas.
I have way more time for this movie than The New World.
Okay. That's like the...
I know.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So, one movie is less
I
than the other,
than
right?
Than
right? I know, thanks. Yeah. this movie... Mm-hmm. I think what it probably benefited from on my side was that I didn't watch it in one sitting. I had to half and half it because I had something to do in the middle there. But Terrence Malick kind of tried something interesting, I think, with this one. And I haven't watched Tree of Life or the other one, Days of Heaven. So I don't have those to kind of compare against.
Have you seen Thin Red Line?
I have seen very small amounts of it. Very small. So, as I say, I don't have very much to kind of compare this movie with. But this movie was actually very weird. And you guys know that that's kind of my
weakness. Was it weird though, Douglas?
It was.
A linear story told poorly.
He hasn't watched Tree of Life yet. So maybe it's because it's the first Terrence Malick like this, he's calling it weird.
Right. It is a linear story that is told very, very badly.
Yeah, so this story is told with very little, well, zero dialogue, mainly voiceover, and it kind of goes back and forth at some points. It's very strange that the connecting piece of this puzzle, so to speak, that is Ben Affleck, is really not a major part of this movie and not examined at all, which I thought was a little bit odd. This movie, I suppose you could say, is really not about him, but about the ladies in his life, I suppose. As Damian says, you pay much more attention to Olga Kurylenko's character rather than Rachel McAdams, which is a damn shame. It's a low-down, dirty shame, actually. but it is what it is. You see a lot of things happen, you know, and there are a lot of strange... There are just a lot of odd moments in this movie. Like, all of a sudden... So, Ben Affleck is with Olga, and Olga has a daughter. At the beginning of the movie, there's a scene where Olga is in the States talking to one of her neighbors, and her neighbor is saying, oh, you know, it must be hard being a single parent. Why don't we, you know, have some sort of play date, because my daughter is probably a couple years younger than yours, but, you know... Clearly, she's out of her element because she ain't from the US of A, and you know she needs a friend kind of deal. And isn't it sad that Olga's raising her as a single mother, which is makes it clear that Ben or whoever else is out of the picture, and that is kind of cut off and never touched again. That scenario with her without Ben. In the States, and then it goes back to the story, which is her and Ben and their burgeoning romance from Paris to then the States, and then you have this kind of bipolar sort of move from the daughter, where one day she's in love with Ben and the next, you know, she's saying things like, you're not my father. And, the more I think of it, is the more I really don't like this movie.
So hold on. You went through a path of going, oh my goodness, I have to watch a Terrence Malick movie. Oh my goodness, look at the camera. A movie might not be that bad. Oh my goodness, I think I'm thinking about this. I don't like this movie. Is that the process you went through?
In a sense, except I didn't get as high as this movie isn't that bad. Mm-hmm. I got as high as there are some elements to this movie that I admire.
No, you don't.
Right? Mm-hmm. I admired that while I was watching this movie, mm-hmm. It didn't feel to drag too much, given the nature of the movie.
For no reason, there is people walking on water for no reason.
To talk about that,
there is a scene where water is running into a drain for no reason, and on the whole Javier Bardem section for no reason.
Yeah, by the way,
we can go and go and go.
I have to say, Andrew, I wouldn't. So you spoke about Javier Bardem being a little bit useless towards the end of the movie. I would go a little bit further. I wouldn't really quantify that statement. He was just pretty much useless in all of that movie.
Yeah, he was. when I saw Javier Bardem and Rachel McAdams, I went, you guys should just take out those two names, because all of that section is pointless. Rachel McAdams' section is useless and throwaway, because what happens? Nothing happens. And Javier Bardem, for Christ's sake.
Yeah.
And why is he narrating in Spanish? He lives in America. Why is his narration in another language? Just to fuck with us?
No, no. Well,
no, it's
you
just
can,
to
you
fuck
can,
with us.
No, it's not. There is a reason. Mm-hmm. At least my reasoning behind it is that all of the narration we hear mm-hmm. throughout this movie is all internal monologue, right? It's not like a lot of other movies where, even in other Terrence Malick movies, where what he's really done is these intercut scenes where people are actually talking to one another, but we're hearing part of the dialogue elsewhere. Like, this one is all internal monologue, and right. it's kind of cluing us into the fact that Javier Bardem, being a person in America, mm-hmm. still thinks within his own language. It's just like Olga Kirilenko. There are moments where she actually speaks in English,
Andrew,
but all of her narration
Andrew,
is in French.
Stop you. I'm going to stop you right there. If Javier Bardem had his internal monologue using what your... Excuse. If he had it in English, what would change? Did they explain or show at any point Javier Bardem leaving America and coming back to America?
Anyway,
no.
I'll just
it is
no.
There,
I'm going to cut in the middle. I'm going to
only
cut in the middle of this
Terrence
argument.
Malick
we need to get
is masturbating because. He's fucking with everybody.
Thank
it
you,
is
Damien.
Useless.
Thank you for your point of view.
So, all right, just one thing I want to bring up as mm-hmm. a side note. Another thing that I actually kind of appreciated about this movie mm. was you brought up the things like, oh, there's a shot of bisons out mm-hmm. of nowhere, or them on those kind of things are just amazing to look at for me, and I kind of enjoyed how.
National Geographic, son.
Yes, National Geographic.
I have that. There's a website that I can go to. Our magazine I can order for $19.99 for 2 years off Amazon.com that I do order. If I want pretty pictures, Andrew Robinson, I know where to get them. Don't waste 2 hours of my life showing me pretty pictures and a shit story. Right? You don't use that as an excuse. Don't you dare use that as an ever again. Never ever do that again.
Okay. I think in the interest of not killing each other, I just will have two more things to say, okay. and then we can move on.
Right.
One, which is the partial. One, which is the positive.
Mm-hmm.
This movie, as with most Malick films, was mm-hmm. beautiful, well shot in the sense that everything looked beautiful.
Right. And the camera is stuck in people's
right.
bellies or
exactly.
over their heads
exactly.
for no reason.
For no reason, but mm-hmm. for a pretty shot. All right?
Fair enough.
Okay, thank you.
Fair enough.
Now, the second thing, which is now the negative.
No, you said two positives.
No, I said one was a positive.
All right, never mind.
Two was now the negative.
Okay, sorry.
This story is to call it weak would be weak. It would just...
An understatement.
Mm-hmm. So this is supposed to be a love story. I'm not sure between whom, because there is no happy ending. However, yes, a lot of movies don't have happy endings, but it's so you never actually fixate on any one couple, so to speak, that you really understand that this is who I should be rooting for, right? I personally rooted for Rachel McAdams because I like her more. But that is probably not the intent of the film. So this movie starts with Olga, ends with her having to leave because her visa expires. Leave the States, rather. Then in the middle there's some finagling with Rachel McAdams. And that ends poorly. And then we're back with Olga, which, again, ends poorly. Because Olga is childish.
Did it end poorly? Didn't he go back to the wonder for Olga? Wasn't that how the movie ended? He went back to Paris or wherever the hell that part of the world is to be with Olga.
No,
and she was playing in the dirt for no goddamn reason.
No.
Yet again,
I did not take that. I did not take that. That's how you know this movie is horrible, because I didn't take that. I took that as just some random shot that had nothing to do with the movie. All right, so clearly
that makes the movie a worse movie.
Yes, it does.
At least I've tried to make a decent. a bad movie a little bit better. Aren't you the one that's supposed to be defending this
movie? I'm not defending this movie. I'm just saying there were things to be admired. However, it's still foolishness.
The movie ends with just a random shot out of the blue.
Because essentially that is kind of like that's kind of like to the one that, as you say, that is his dream. He wants this but realizes he can't have it. So I don't know, whatever, right? But what I see this movie as, this so you have this very childish, this all over the place woman from France.
She is Zoe Deschanel, but no, they couldn't cast her. She was busy shooting The New Girl.
Don't you dare! And she's, you know, this horrible person. And in the second relationship, she goes, which, by the way, I'm not even sure if that's the second relationship or a piece of the first that we haven't seen. You don't know with this movie. This movie is just all over the place.
No, it was clear that it was her coming back after having gone away, that it was a continuation. It was, which was what happened with the Rachel McAdams thing. You see in the narration when Rachel McAdams starts that you hear Olga Kurylenko say, "You told me about her." And then you can hear on the phone when Olga calls Ben later, that she's like, I'm coming back. And he's like, oh shit, I have to choose. And then that's why Rachel tells him he's the worst, because he chose her.
No, my friend. No, I'm not saying that this movie is not a linear movie. It could well be. And that's actually how I took it, right? However, when you have movies like this, Andrew, don't assume that they are linear, right? Just because she said you told me about her doesn't mean that actually the whole first hour is after the second half an hour and she was just now telling you that he told her. Yeah. So don't take that, right?
This is fun.
As a given.
I like this.
Also,
the podcast which actually fights about the narrative of a Terrence Malick film.
The podcast that is trying. I have two co-hosts that both hate this movie and are actively trying
to make sense out of it.
Find ways to like the movie little bit more. Because if they come over to Damien's side, then just seems defeatist.
So let me tell you what really happened in both scenarios, I think.
Please,
right?
Explain it to me.
If you notice, it wasn't that Ben chose Olga and therefore he was this horrible human being. If you notice, things went awry immediately after Rachel McAdams says, "I love you and I want you to be my husband." All of a sudden Ben's like, "Really? I don't know about that." And that's when things went awry, and Olga actually said it in as many words that, you know, anything serious emotion unsettles you. So what I think this movie is hinged upon is the fact that this guy is going around and ruining his probably very good relationships, because the other party, probably rightfully so, is like, yeah, it's time to pony up, dude. I'm there. You just need to know, get there with me. And let's, you know, do this.
So is that why Olga Kurylenko cheated on him?
It's a possibility. Okay. Yeah, I don't know. But, you know, this movie, as I keep saying, right? This movie is such that you could say, you could essentially make up any reason in your mind for anything that was done here, and it makes some sort of sense to somebody.
Oh, so it's the Prometheus of...
So I just want to end with
a romance movie.
Fuck this movie.
Thank you.
And let's move on with the podcast.
Thank you.
So are we going round table ones?
Yes, I think so. I think so.
I'm going to give this movie a zero. I'm going to be the only person to challenge to bring his own movie to the commissioner. So that,
I want to see what
so that
he says
Joel
after
can
seeing
give
this
movie.
Movie
a zero.
I want evidence that Joel watched this movie.
There's no way I'm going to do that to Joel. don't think we should mess with the commissioner. Not now. It's too dangerous.
Last week I asked everyone, with all of our summer blockbuster talking and such, about what they thought would A, be the most objectively best movie, which I just mucked up that question. And
Pacific
B,
Rim.
What
the most
what,
best
what,
movie?
Right.
the most objectively best movie.
And what would be what's the movie this summer you're most anticipating?
Pacific
and
Rim.
<For both. laughs> The inter-
hey guys, did you see that? Like, I spoke to Douglas already, but Douglas is an insane person. Andrew Robinson. Did you
Dude,
see that second
Pacific
trailer?
Pacific Rim is number one.
Dog, guy used that ship to hit a giant monster in the face. Now, if I'm not there day one, I'm probably going to have to kill myself.
You want to come over and watch that IMAX with me?
Absolutely not. I'm broken up as it is.
Anyways, the internet responded. The first response here is from Rand McNeil over at The Matinee. He brought up Before Midnight as the best movie of the summer. And Superman,
right,
Man
sir.
Of Steel, as his most anticipated.
Two good picks.
Meryl Barr brought up Star Trek Into Darkness as the film he's most anticipating, and the best movie to be Elysium.
Could be, yeah. All right, two more good picks. That's not bad. Elysium could be. It really
could. It could also make a lot of money.
I don't know.
I don't know about it making a lot of money, but it could be a very good movie.
Truth on Cinema. Once again, Star Trek for Psyched, and Iron Man 3 or Man of Steel for Objective Best.
I'm sorry, what? No? I'm sorry, what was the second part?
What I'm assuming that he did this before he actually saw Iron Man.
No.
There's
no
way.
That's no way.
I love Iron Man to death. I am probably the most hugely biased Iron Man Onion in this
Iron
podcast.
Man Onion.
Yes. And yet there's no way that I could ever dream of dreaming of this being a good movie objectively.
Hey guys, come on. Dude, I don't know if you know what the word objectively means.
You realize this is a man in an iron suit that flies and blows shit up, mm-hmm. right?
So it's the best, objectively.
Objectively.
Chris Nolan did this one. Chris Nolan did Iron Man 3. Wait, let me double check that. Oh, no, he didn't.
Anyway, Andrew, continue. By the way, have we officially blocked whoever it was that we decided to block last
No, he
time?
Didn't.
No, he didn't. That bastard. Bastard!
I'm not Andrew blocking anyone
oh,
for
wow.
you.
Andrew also doesn't have his microphone on.
Yes, it is.
Oh.
Okay.
We saw your mouth moving and heard no words.
Mm-hmm. I hope I don't muck up this name. Kashif Pastor. I don't... That can't be a... Is that... says that he doesn't know what can be the best movie of the summer, but what he's most anticipating is Elysium.
Okay. Fair enough.
All right.
A few more responses for Man of Steel from Louis Dullian. I hope I'm pronouncing that right, as well as Kashiki Harrison. But my two favorite responses, one from Kyle Turner, which to the best movie and the most anticipated are tied with Before Midnight, and he is the most right person in the world.
Nope.
Jonathan Sullivan for most anticipated Star Trek and best movie of the summer, there is no such thing.
Yes. I agree with you, Andrew, though. Before Midnight is definitely the correct answer for both movies.
Absolutely not. I don't know if you guys saw a robot hit a giant monster with a ship. I don't know if, like, maybe you guys are watching a different internet that I watch. But I saw the trailer. And so Pacific Rim has vaulted Man of Steel for most anticipated. Even more so than Fast 6. It is now Fast 6, Man of Steel, and Pacific Rim. because I want to see that. I want to see Jared Mansos get hit in the face. Cannot wait. What's the question for this week, Andrew Robinson? So what is your favorite Terrence Malick film? Trick question. None of them are.
Damien, stop it. Stop it. I was wondering, because while it's summer, we kind of did all the summer discussion last week. I kind of want to go into something else. And I started reading up a lot of sites. Why am I saying it like that? It sounds so wrong. More specifically, I need to stop drinking before the podcast.
You looked on the internet and you found something.
I was reading an article over at LobuzaMovies.com, which is a blog for Peter Labuza, and he wrote a column for the defense of Oblivion, which, while I can tell him he's completely wrong, I do find interesting, and I wonder if there are any films out there which you had thought one way on, and someone out there, some critic, some columnist, a writer, someone on Twitter just said no to you and mounted a defense that made you consider looking at it the other way. What was that film?
Have we forgotten the the motto of the Unnamed Movie Podcast?
Right. We are always right.
Actually, that is a corollary. The actual motto is "the internet is wrong."
Yeah, well,
I thought the motto was "we are the definitive response to any question."
I have movies like that, but it works the opposite way. I read a review, then watch a movie, deem the movie garbage, but cannot get that stupid review out of my head, and keep rewatching the movies.
So, like, so did you find any of those reviews for To The Wonder?
No. The reviews of To The Wonder just solidified my feeling on the movie.
If this was the Cold War, we could keep each other warm. I said on the first occasion that I met Marie, we were crawling through the hatch that was the missile silo door, and I don't think that she really thought that much of me. I never had to learn to love her like I learned to love the bomb. She just came along and started to ignore me. And as we waited for the big one, I started singing her my song.
You care about me, don't you, Sergeant? I always felt like you did. Why do you always make yourself out like a rock? One day I can come up and talk to you. By the next day, it's like we never even met. Lonely house now. You ever get lonely?
Only around people.
Only around people.
You still believing in the beautiful light, are you? How do you do that? You're a magician to me.
I still see a spark in you.
So, this week, tying in with To The Wonder and mostly Terrence Malick films, because I couldn't ask you guys to do your top 5 Terrence Malick scenes or moments or characters or anything, because I think we can't. I don't think we can call ourselves encyclopedic knowledge of Terrence Malick's work.
I could come up with 5 scenes. They're all the credit scenes of Terrence Malick.
And I didn't want that to happen.
All 5 credit scenes.
You're like, it's over, yes! I wanted us to talk about our top 5 voiceovers in film. Because that is a huge feature in all of Terrence Malick's films. So I guess I'll kick it off. And I was trying to think specifically of films where the use of voiceover actually helped me in enjoying the movie more, because voiceover is usually just generally monologue or internally or externally, where a character is basically breaking the fourth wall, but instead of having him like Ferris Buellering it, where he just stands up and looks at the camera and says, "Are you listening?" It just has it there for us to enjoy. And my number five is a film which has so many characters giving voiceover. I find a lot of my movies have that. It starts with Sin City, and I was rewatching some of it before we started the podcast, and the scene which I want to speak specifically to is the one with Benicio del Toro as well as Clive Owen in the car as he's driving towards the tar pit, and we get more and more of him just talking to us and getting into his thought process as to how he's going insane in that one moment. Like, I don't know about you guys. I know we all love Sin City, but I'm willing to go hands down and say that's the best scene in the movie.
Nope.
To Douglas. Oh my yes. Goodness. So my number five is Undercover Brother. No, it is not. My number five, starting off with a bang and a kiss actually, is Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, starring Robert Downey Jr. Directed by as Shane Tony Black Stark, as well
as the director of Tony Stark.
Yes. It is Iron Man the prequel, apparently. Yes, this movie is great. I have to at least start off by saying I generally hate voiceovers in movies. I just don't like them. And also, I hate people who love voiceovers in movies. Mm-hmm. So, Damien, I hate you.
You're looking at you're backing
Sorry,
up the wrong
Andrew,
tree.
Sorry, I hate you. Also, I hate Morgan Freeman. Why? Because one
let's
Morgan Freeman's voice is not as cool as he thinks it is.
Let's not say things that we can't say about now, though.
And two, Morgan Freeman don't act as good as he thinks he does. And everybody thinks he does, too.
Right? You're saying things you don't mean. Just relax.
So, I'm sure Damien is going to bring up some sort of Morgan Freeman-related movie in this, but...
Of course. Morgan Freeman is actually at the top of the list.
Of course
but we'll keep you in limbo as to the most obvious pick in the world.
Of course. So Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
Number five is Rorschach's Journal. I mean, Watchmen. It's Watchmen. Nah, Rorschach is the best. His voiceover in that movie made it 900 times better. And... what's his name? Earl Haley or something like that. The actor that did Rorschach was there's a lot of things I love about Watchmen, and Rorschach is the thing I love the most about Watchmen. And his voiceover. Even from in the trailers, I was already excited for that movie because of the voiceover. Watchmen.
So, needing to call the obvious audible at that point, because I was going to focus more on Dr. Manhattan with Watchmen. Right? But I'll call an audible. He took Watchmen, and I'm going to bring up the next most obvious point in the world, which is Martin Scorsese with Goodfellas. Because I always wanted to be a gangster. Just... Ray Liotta, the way that he describes that world as we're going through it, there's something about the narration in that movie where I think one of my favorite scenes which deals with it is when we're going into this bar and we're actually having Ray Liotta narrate, introducing us to all of these characters. And pretty much at every point where we stop and pause to say, "This is this character," you see the character actually look at us and nod. And say, "Hey, how you doing?" or whatever. And he explains how all of these people got their names. They're like, he's Two Nuts because he cracks the nuts twice every time or something. I can't remember exactly the term and the phrasing throughout. But Goodfellas is just great. Douglas will back me up on that any day of the week.
Douglas is being a jerk.
Yes, I am. I love that movie, though.
What? You two are the only people in the world that love
I know, right? What? Okay, so I have decided to reshuffle my list. Why? Because I think I've got a couple of good movies that need explanation, but nobody else here will have. However, I must first take the ones that I know other people will have. Now, the thing about voiceover for me is that, as I said, I don't really like it in movies. I think the voiceover kind of generally, the only time I really like it is when it complements something that is either really kooky, really campy, and all in a good way, of course, or really, really odd and strange. And this movie is one of those. Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas is one of the most fantastic movies. Probably, it's hard to talk about any one movie being Terry G's best, but this could be it. It's definitely one of his most famous. And it's one where if you watch it and you see drunk Johnny Depp or Captain Jack Sparrow, as he has now, that character has now been, you know, essentially.
That's what Johnny Depp
is. That's what Johnny Depp is now. That's what drunk Johnny Depp is. You see that it came from a true place, an honest place, and a place where good movies would follow.
I was pouring sweat. My blood is too thick for Nevada. I've never been able to properly explain myself in this climate. Okay. Be quiet. Be calm. Name? Frank? And press affiliation. Nothing else.
I don't know what he's doing now, but I hope that one day Terry Gilliam calls him up, brings him over to his house, slaps him in the face and says, okay, we're doing a good movie again. Deal with it. Damien.
It's my turn.
Yeah.
There was voiceover in 300. I cannot remember the name of the guy.
He's an Australian guy. He's actually in that show that I was watching recently, Killing Time, I think it's called, but I don't know his name.
Right, I've seen him in a couple of things.
Oh, David something. No? I'm
wasting your
time. Yeah, all right.
In my brain, I just keep saying he's the storyteller.
Right. In 300. And his voice, as well as slow-mo killing, murdering of people, is the only two things you need to remember about 300.
My number three is a movie that I recently rewatched like around a week ago randomly. And there's something about the opening narration which just got me. And it's Spike Jonze's adaptation starring Nicolas Cage. Like, I was listening to it, and I mean, when you start out with it, with that line of, do I have an original thought in my head? And it's just this narcissistic, self-deprecating, low self-esteem moment where he's just questioning everything about his being. He's talking about how he needs to go to the gym, he needs to go get rid of his garbage, he needs to do all of these things, but he's just sitting away at his typewriter. He finds himself on the set of Being John Malkovich, and he sees people, as the writer of that movie, playing Charlie Kaufman. He is being said, who the hell are you? Get off the set. And he's just in this whole hole of a life. And then it continues throughout the movie where he begins to narrate the story within the story. And, like, I can't think of a narration which I enjoyed more. Well, actually, there are two more, but I think of that. Think of easily that I enjoyed more. I cannot think
of any narration I enjoy more, except these.
Except those two more that are critical.
You know what's really cool, or I thought really funny? Well, first of all, that's a great movie. But do you remember what Charlie Kaufman's twin brother's name was?
Andy Kaufman.
So he's not a real person, clearly. But what I thought was funny was that for the longest while, and I don't know if it's still up there, but if you actually went to the IMDb page for this movie, Andy Kaufman is credited for writing it. Both Andy and Charlie Kaufman. So I thought
because
was,
he went to a seminar awesome. Who said yeah. who said they had the answers to writing.
Yes. So I'm not going to really go with any fanfare for this one. Number three, Danny Boyle presents Trainspotting. Done.
Fair enough. Number three is a laundry list of movies, but they're all from the same genre. It is every film noir movie.
Oh, well, of course.
Big Sleep is one of my personal favorites, but just pick all of them and all of them.
So
my number two is a fan favorite. It's A Christmas Story.
Oh.
And when I think about this movie and I think about the narration that goes along with it, it kind of reminds me of one of my favorite podcasts. It reminds me of the Tobolowsky Files, where it gives you this warm feeling of someone just telling you this story in such a tone, because you have this voice, which obviously you kind of just imagine is the older version of our protagonist in the film, telling his children the story of when he was a child. It never confirms or denies this throughout the movie. But at the same time, while the story is happening, you never hear him try to show any form of regret or any form of forward thinking, going like, I know that happened and I knew it was stupid, but whatever. It stays completely within the moment throughout. It has the enthusiasm throughout. I was rewatching scenes, and I was watching this one scene of him decoding a message. He got like this decoder, you know, this children's toy, and he listened to the television, he wrote it down, and then he realized as he was finished, they sent him an advertisement, and he's just like, seriously? And throughout this whole time, you're kept into it because of the narration. It's not just the fact that you have this child who in the moment is doing this, but this older version of him is just going like, yes, I'm excited, I have to find out what the message is. And it just works. I love that narration.
So Damien just spoke about film noir movies. Mm-hmm. And clearly there is that genre is ripe for the pickings. And so Andrew, should I take your number one pick? Because I know this is going to be it.
I'm pretty sure you don't have my number one pick.
Wow.
I think you have my number two pick though. Pretty sure this is where you're going.
I am a dirtbag. I'm pretty sure I've gotten both of y'all. Actually, no, it's not. But I'm pretty sure somebody's going to get the one that I'm thinking of. And I'm not going to say it. We'll see. We'll see who takes it. My number two pick, as I said to you before, voiceovers for me are all about the weird, which I've kind of covered already. But also kind of like the kooky and the campy. And film noir has a few of those. One being Give 'Em Hell, Malone, starring Thomas Jane, and that's a character, that's a guy that actually I had written off a long time ago, and slowly but surely he's done some decent things, and this is one of the better ones. I love this movie. This is not anything that anybody objectively could say is a good movie, but it's just so much fun to watch, and the voiceover just adds that kick, you know, it kind of just, you know, makes fun of that whole film noir sort of
which
genre.
Movie is this? I'm sorry?
Give 'Em Hell, Malone.
Give 'Em Hell. Oh, that movie. Oh, yeah. I remember that one.
I'm not sure if that's a good or nope. a bad thing.
Nope. Nope. Not good.
I'm going to watch it again tonight. My number two's two picks. It's the same guy in both. It's Usual Suspects.
Oh, okay.
And that guy is in another movie where he's out of it, and he is trying to bang a teenage girl for most of the rest of the movie. Andrew, do you know what movie I'm talking about?
American Beauty.
Well done.
My name is Lester Burnham. This is my neighborhood. This is my street. This is my life.
Douglas is still lost in the dark, looking confused as all hell. What is Damian talking about? Yes. So those are my two number twos.
It's funny because you say he's trying to bang a teenage girl. I immediately was like, okay, can't be Kevin Spacey. What was Del Toro in? What was like? I'm like starting to think of all these other
Douglas
guys.
Douglas is like, was there narration in Excessive Baggage?
Oh my goodness!
Why did Andrew pick Excessive Baggage as the draw for Del Toro? What kind of evil mind thinks like that?
I was trying to think of something with a teenage girl. So my number one movie comes from the mind of Woody Allen.
Wow.
And really? It's from 1986, okay. Starring Michael Caine, Hannah and her sisters. I don't know about you guys, or if you've ever seen this movie, but when the movie opens, and you have that narration going of Michael Caine starting with "God, she's so beautiful."
Michael Caine.
Who was it who made that joke where if you say it properly, you'll hear Michael Caine?
Boy, if I get serious, I start to go lower.
But
it's,
yeah,
Tristram Shandy. Where are those two guys again? Rob. Or Roy.
Rob Ryden. Rob Ryden. And Steve Coogan.
Yeah.
The Trip.
Yep.
Yeah. But yeah, Hannah and Her Sisters. I really, really like this movie. I mean, it even ends with a very similar narration with after Michael Caine has gone on his journey and learned everything he needs to learn. And it has that same tone with. He pretty much could be saying, God, she's so beautiful at that point. It's great. I like this movie a lot.
Douglas,
okay,
Rock.
So folks, I have a quick request of both of you. Mm-hmm. Can you please put your hands up and put them on the side of your heads, like so. Andrew, okay. Andrew, I can see you. Please, yes. Put them on the side of your heads. Okay, because I'm about to blow your minds and I don't want it to, you know, I don't want anything
to mess up,
anything
room,
to mess up anywhere. All right, okay. Cool. So my number one pick is... none other than Damian has middle fingers up at me. Mm-hmm. None other than the inimitable Bruce Campbell in Army of Darkness.
And that is why I have these middle fingers up. Because I knew it was coming. You are a stupid man.
Hail to the king, baby.
Come on,
guys.
Come
on. If Duke Nukem is spoofing you, you've done a bad job. Done a bad thing.
Is it weird that in my life I experienced Duke Nukem before Army of Darkness, so I had no clue what
I know
were telling me.
We were just out of it. It wasn't for at least, 5 to 10 years later that we... at least I knew about Army of Darkness. Because I only found out about that in university, as in third year. Wow.
Yes. Yeah. And your lives were worse off.
No. They were much better off.
If
much.
If you've never seen Army of Darkness, nothing would have
happened. Have you never watched Army of Darkness?
I've seen Army of Darkness.
So how can you say these kind of things?
Because while the movie's fun and also dumb, you guys love that movie way. But I understand you guys love that movie like how I love Airborne. So
that's why I don't
argue with you guys.
That is exactly how I love that movie.
Arguing with me about Airborne is a waste of time. Because I agree with everything you say and still like it way more than you like it. But Damian, that didn't make sense. I know. my number one pick, I told you from the beginning, is Morgan Freeman. He's the number one pick. We can choose movies if you'd like. Shawshank Redemption is one, but let's just stick with Morgan Freeman.
So I'd like to scold all of us.
Yes.
Because out of the three of us, neither of us have picked either of the two Joseph Gordon-Levitt movies where he has voiceover, directed by Ryan...
Ryan Johnson.
Ryan Johnson. What's going on here? Because neither Brick nor Looper got in our top five. Wow.
His voice. Right. Look, I love...
Lupo was your number one movie of last year. How is that not in your list?
Let me be clear.
Lupo is my number what? Two?
Cobra Commando.
Lupo is his number one?
Cobra Commando is a favorite, right? I love Cobra Commando. But his voice is not what I love. Right. Voice over was the key bit of this question. Right? Not best movie that had voiceover.
Oh, that's how I took it, because if you're looking at best voiceover, there's far and few and far between.
I went with people who had great voices. Which is why Morgan Freeman wins. This is Nelson Mandela.
I think it's best at this point to call an end to the podcast. Mm-hmm. So I'd like to thank everyone for listening. As usual, you can hear the podcast over at G-Man Reviews or via iTunes or through the Stitcher network. We're also available through applications on Android such as Pocket Cast. You can find all of my writings over at G-Man Reviews. I'm on Twitter at G-Man Reviews. Douglas is DGR Lost, his name, and Damien is Damien _ White. White with a Y. Watch good movies, please.
Pacific Rim.
Yeah. Pacific Rim.